move to open country now on Radio 4, and Helen Mark is in North Wales to meet the Apple Detective.
For this morning's open country, as the final apples fall from the trees, we've come to one of the most significant fruit-growing areas of Britain. It's not the orchards of Kent, Gloucestershire and Herefordshire, but North Wales. For it's here that some of the world's rarest species of fruit have been discovered, and I've come to meet the man who's rescued them. Ian Sturrock has been described as the Inspector Morse of the apple world, and for the last 3 decades he has been hacking his way through the most overgrown parts of this part of the country in search of lost and forgotten fruit.
Mind your face, Helen, yeah? See those brambles? That's it. You okay? That's it.
I'm going to follow behind you.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but I am going to keep back a few steps because you're swinging a machete, and you're
Follow me. It's all right. Look, this here. Look, this. You can see there's fencing either. This has been a walkway, hasn't it?
Quite difficult to see because, like, this whole area that I'm in now is covered with ivy and brambles.
It's a jungle, isn't it?
It's a veritable jungle, and I'm with Ian Sturrock. The place that we are now trying to enter into is this overgrown, almost secret garden on the Penryn Castle estate North Wales. We'd only be a couple of miles from Bangor, wouldn't we?
That's right,
just to the east of
the
Bangor.
The castle's over there. Yeah. That's owned by the National Trust. This bit is private, and it's just gone to rack and ruin, unfortunately.
How did you find out about this place and these...
Well, I've spent the last 40 years in North Wales creeping about places like this. It's an interesting place, isn't it? It's a romantic place. It's an exciting place. Obviously very historical. Very atmospheric.
Behind us, this towering wall, it must be about 16, 17 feet high. Again, all covered in ivy. It's a veritable jungle, really.
And of course, in those days, the bigger your wall, the higher your status. Mm. And they're big walls. And I think if you look there, you can see that there's been a greenhouse or some structure
against that wall.
And that's a south-facing wall, so maybe they grew peaches and nectarines, some high-quality fruit in there. Along here, this was a walkway with the espaliered fruit trained against these wrought iron fences, so you could walk along here. Probably the other side they would have had vegetables, and in their day people like yourself, your ladyship, would promenade along here. This would have been gravel paths. You wouldn't get your little feet dirty, but you wouldn't really want to see the vegetables. They were a bit common, but you would see the fruit.
Beautiful. But what we see now is very sad, because we just have this tangle of growth, of vegetation, and the wood that we can see of the apple trees is gnarled and knotted and twisted. I mean, it looks as though this is an apple tree at the end of its life.
I mean, the trees, you could actually get to live quite a lot longer, but you'd never be able to make these espaliers again. The tree...
The horizontal.
Yeah, it's now growing up, isn't it? It's turning back into more of a tree-shaped tree, because there's been no gardeners here to train it along the fence.
So it just disappeared.
In the old days there would have probably been 50 gardeners working here. That huge house that we saw as we came in was in fact the head gardener's house. Head gardeners in those days had status. They wore top hats, they didn't get their hands dirty, and you called them sir. They wore suits and ties.
In the garden.
That's right, they gave orders.
Well, you're going to open this old apple. Have you any idea what it is?
Not really.
Oh, now just as you slice it open, you've got this beautiful star shape in the core of the apple.
Look, it's star shape, but in fact it's still very open, isn't it? That, I'm sure, is very characteristic of this variety. We know it's a cooker because it's so big, and it's starting to, they're all on the floor, it's starting to, the flesh is starting to soften up. Try that, you taste it rather than me.
It's not as sharp as a Bramley by any means, is it?
No.
That's not bad.
It's cuckoo's gold, it's quite delicate.
Mm.
It's got quite a short stalk.
And knobbled. Actually.
And knobbled, yeah, that
look
beaded.
At the little, like,
yeah, that's
little,
right. Beading, they call that.
Spots on
this,
at the end.
This, I bet you, is called Golden Spire. I'm sure it is. Golden Spire was a popular Victorian variety and very decorative flowers. Remember, you're walking up, you're promenading up the path, and then imagine these hundreds of huge golden apples as you're walking along. And you might have a word with the cook that will send the girl down to pick them. These cuckoos are kind of a puree. You'd have them inside a pie. I mean, look at that. That's lovely, clean fruit from a 120-year-old tree that's been neglected, well, since the war.
Yeah, it's still flowers and fruits.
It's still flowers and fruits, and the fruit is clean.
So, you have lots of stories to tell about this search.
Well, I think every tree has a story to tell, doesn't
yeah.
it? I mean, this place has a story to tell.
And probably one that you would be most proud of would be the story involving an apple and tree that was found on the holy island of Bardsey, which is on the tip of the Clain Peninsula here.
That's
in North
right.
Wales.
The Clain Peninsula is the tip of North Wales, and like a lot of peninsulas, they extend out to sea, and where they've been eroded, you get an island at the end.
Bardsey
Island, or Ynys Enlli in Welsh.
So you went to Bardsey?
I've been there before. But a friend of mine found an apple tree there that he didn't know what it was. He knows his fruit. He brought 1.5 fruit back to me. They'd been rotten by then. I didn't know what they were. They were clean, lovely, clean, golden apples. No disease at all. And growing on this totally windswept island where no other trees were growing. I sent them down to the National Fruit Collection in Kent. And the experts there, the national experts there, said that this was a unique variety.
And there was only one of them?
There's only one tree, that's right. But if you only have one animal, the animal becomes extinct, doesn't it? But if you have only one tree of an apple variety, because you reproduce it vegetatively by taking cuttings, you can perpetuate that variety because one is enough.
You're obviously very proud of having rediscovered the Bardsey apple and bringing it back into the apple-growing world, saving it from the brink of extinction, really, Ian. But it's not the only apple that you've rescued.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago, a bloke called Mike Bowyer, who's a marine archaeologist, informed me of an apple called the diamond apple that originates from a shipwreck. And I mean, we can go and see him if you like.
Good. We'll have to move, because now that we've stopped hacking and chopping, the midges are yeah, getting to us.
So that's Golden Spire, pretty sure.
We could have come to no more contrasting a landscape than the one we've just left, Ian and I. We've come down onto the shoreline and the estuary at Bangor. There's this vast expanse in front of Ian, Mike Bowyer and myself. It's sand, seaweed, and the shingle that's here is broken slate, grey-blue slate. And there are a couple of islands in the distance out to sea. What are they, Mike?
That is Puffin Island. That one isn't an island because there's land in between and there's houses on them, but that is the Great Orme, which has been, they've been mining copper from there for the last nearly 4,000 years.
So it's pertinent that we've come down to a coastal landscape, because the discovery of the diamond apple that you were talking about, Ian, has to do with maritime history. And as a maritime archaeologist, Mike, what's the story of the diamond?
The story of the diamond. The diamond was built in 1823, and she was owned by the Macy family, Macy's of New York, a great store, a branch of that family. They purchased this ship as a fast boat to cross the Atlantic. It was the first time in recorded history that boats actually left America or Britain, as it was then, on time, whether they were fully loaded or not. And she hit San Badrick Reef in January of 1824, and unfortunately 8 people lost their lives, including the captain. And he's buried in the churchyard in Telebont. But she was carrying a cargo of possibly some cotton and barrels of apples. and the barrels of apples were washed ashore, and of course the locals, anything that came ashore from shipwrecks was classed as manna from heaven, the harvest of the sea, as they called it. But as soon as they took a bite of these apples, they were sour, and so they didn't eat them, they just planted them. And there were several orchards eventually grown in the Dufferin area, and we thought that none had survived about 10 years ago, but we found one 2 years ago, 18 months.
That's right, yeah, it's just the one tree. Yes.
How do you know what you were looking for? I mean, how did you know anything about this?
Well, I knew about these apples, and I was passing apples over to Ian, but the apples I was finding, although they were from old trees, were not that apple. And then one day we went down there again, and we met somebody else, a friend of mine, and we went into this guy's garden, and lo and behold,
there was a really, really old woodworm tree. It's about 5 foot tall. You could see through holes in it. It was older than the other old trees, and the apples were bright red and shiny. And I hate to say it, I had that feeling. So we'd been scrumping around this area all day, sneaking about, looking suspicious. Obviously got no neighbourhood watch scheme there. And we knocked on the door of this house and we said, could we have a look at your apple tree, please? It turned out the gentleman that owned the house he's the chairman of the local gardening club. He really, really knows his stuff. He said this tree was the diamond apple. He had inherited the house from his great aunt. She said it was the diamond apple. So we've got 100 years of this one family calling it the diamond apple, and it's in the exact location. And it looks a showy red American apple. So I then sent the apple off to the experts in Kent at the National Fruit Collection, and as yet they've failed to identify it as being anything else.
I mean, was there just one left, or do you know of others? You mentioned orchards.
No, we thought the last one had been cut down about 10 years ago, but we just never gave up. But finding one is just enough. We can take it from there, and Ian can redevelop or grow the apple, but we've got the diamond apples, which is a direct descendant from apples of 1823, 1824.
The thing about the diamond apple and the Bardsey apple, now, they could just have remained just a wonderful history story, and a few trees might have been in your orchard, Ian.
Yeah, well, we...
But it's not like that, is it?
No, we could have put them in a museum, but when you've just got one or two in a museum, they're apt to disappear. Mm. That's why it's good to come here to this garden centre with Carol here, because if trees get sold and distributed in everybody's garden, there's a maximum chance that the trees will survive.
So the garden centre that Ian Sturrock is referring to is Seyont Garden Centre, and we're just a couple of miles from Carnarvon. And the Carol that you were referring to is Carol Williams, who's working here at the Garden Centre. So, in your collection of apple trees here, Carol, how many of them are a direct result of what Ian has been working on?
All of them. We wouldn't have any of them if it wasn't for all the work that Ian has done.
And how many is that?
We've got about 7 to 8, but I think we've run out of a few as well.
And here is the Bardsey Island apple.
Obviously, yes. The most famous one.
These are about 3 foot tall and a few sort of sprigs coming out the top of the main stem. So they're quite young trees, are they, Ian?
Yeah, those sprigs are called branches. That tree there is about 2 years old. It is 2 years old. Some of the trees, the really rare ones, like those one there called Trwyn Mochyn, which Carol can translate.
Yeah, Trwyn Mochyn is the snout of a pig, and that's the shape of that apple there.
Well, we have the picture of the apple on the label, but it's not producing apples yet, obviously.
Well, it's only 2 year old. You wouldn't produce much at 2 year old yourself. But the very rare ones are those just upright ones. They're only 1 year old, and they're selling here 1 year old trees because no 2 year old trees exist in the world.
Of what?
Of that one, St. Cecilia.
It's.
Well, I can only produce a few. People like Carol sell them, and then unfortunately I don't have any 2 year old ones. Eventually, when my stock builds up, I can sell two-year-old trees. That Aval diamond apple, I've only got those as one-year-old trees. That's a maiden tree, just a straight stick.
And this is... This is the progeny of the shipwrecked apples.
Exactly, yeah. This is the one we talked about earlier.
And how important do you think Ian is with this work that he does in
Well, without it, all of these would have gone, wouldn't they? I mean, the Bardsey is a classy example. If he hadn't have found it when he did, he's basically the Inspector Morse, isn't he, of the apple world sort of thing. And without him, we wouldn't have these apple trees. We would have lost so many of these for good. And it's an absolute shame because so many people, myself included, you'd have an old apple tree, an old fruit tree in a garden, haven't got a clue what it's called or anything. And now there is somewhere you can go for expert advice, and hopefully if there isn't a name on it, we'll produce a new apple for you, and you know, you've got a named variety then.
See, in some ways I think you're very lucky here in North Wales in terms of your discovery of these apples, because you think of other places where apples were grown, orchards, a lot of them, acres and acres and acres of them, have been grubbed up and lost altogether. But you still have in your countryside, sometimes hidden away, unrecorded, unloved, unused, these old trees. So in some ways, you're better off than other parts of the country which are known as apple tree growing counties.
I mean, I am from Wales anyway, and I think in both my grandparents' house, they had orchards. And I think most places in Wales, that's probably why we've got so many apple trees and other fruit trees here, they had little sort of cottages with a sort of garden, probably a fruit garden and a veg garden as well. But a lot of them have been neglected, and then you have lost them. But fortunately, some of these places still have got orchards. I can remember growing up with, you know, going to the farms with nice orchards in them. So probably we are lucky in that respect, but we need to protect that. We need to support this to make sure that it all continues.
This tree's all right, Rich, isn't it? Look, see, these branches are getting at a nice angle, about 60 degrees, so that the light can get in there. Then we'll get shot of these branches here, and then this next tier is developing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a light slot there, so that the light can get in.
Is this a Bardsey?
This one is, yeah. This patch here is Bardsey's.
Yes. So where we are now, we're in the midst of what is a very, very newly established orchard. And Ian and I have come to meet Richard Hughes and Yolo Povey. And you're working together in establishing cider orchard.
That's right, yeah.
But the Bardsey apple is at the very heart of this Welsh orchard.
Right.
Now, before we sort of inspect the trees any further, because I see Ian's already got his penknife out, actually, I'm not quite sure what he's going to do with it, but it's just getting a sense of the setting of where we are.
Right.
Yolo, we can see the sea about, what, 2-3 miles from us down below?
Yeah, we're about 3-4 miles at the most from the sea, approximately 20 miles from Bardsey itself.
Which would be where from here?
Which would be immediately forward there to your west.
Across the mountains?
Across those mountains there, the Rivals. Mm-hmm. And behind us, we're approximately 4-5 miles from Snowdon. So we're at a point, really, where we're between highland and lowland.
And a gorgeous day. The sun has come out, the skies have cleared, and, you know, I feel the heat on my back. Don't you think that same heat
is
going to encourage the apple trees?
This is Penygroes, the Riviera of North Wales. This slope is ideal for growing trees. It's angling into the sun, and it's free. You can see, look, it's freely drained.
Mm-hmm. And how many trees are in the field, Yolo?
There's 350 of different trees in this particular field.
And about 3.5 acres?
3.5 acres, yeah. And then we've another further 150 to be planted in about 1 acre over the road there.
And concentrating again on the Bardsey?
That'll be more concentrated on Bardsey, depending on Ian's stocks, obviously. And that'll bring in the blending we need for producing genuine branded Welsh product.
What was this field used for before, Richard?
Sheep grazing. And we've sold all our sheep now on the farm, and we're concentrating on orchard and vineyards.
Now, if you had not met Ian, might it have been that you would have gone for a more standard cider-producing orchard apple rather than the Bardsey?
Correct. We can have Welsh cider, a proper Welsh cider now, and okay, we can blend it in with a traditional cider tree, but it makes it something special again for us, which will help, hopefully, to sell the product.
earlier, Ian, we were at a garden centre where the Bardsey apple trees and a few other of the old varieties that you've rescued are now on sale to the general public. And here we are in a place where now they're going to be grown on a commercial scale. So what are your thoughts on that? How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm really pleased to be part of it. You look around you, all this community was here, was based on those slate quarries you can see over there in the distance. This is the boys doing something new. 200 years ago, someone did something new over there and started digging slate out of the ground. And there was a tradition of this area being a slate mining community. Later on, it became a sheep growing community. That was their traditional thing. But communities, to survive, have to move on. You can't have Penacroix becoming a ghost town. So hopefully the boys are pioneers and setting up a new tradition. Welsh cider.
We've done a fair bit of travelling, Ian Storrick and I, but finally we have come to your nursery. And we're about 2 miles from Bangor. And this is where you have your orchard, it's where you have your polytunnels with all your different young maiden trees in them. You have many more outside on the far side of the main path. And it's also your home. This is where you live, not just work. And it's where you come with your family, because your young sons have joined us. We've got Sean, who's 14,
Hi.
And Jojo, who's 10.
Yeah.
So do you come to give your dad a bit of a hand from time to time?
Yeah, we help him out in the polytunnels and yeah.
So you're busy attaching labels and tags onto the canes so that the apples are held steady.
Yeah.
So I'll let you get on with that sort of job. I mean, just listening to you talk, Ian, it's obvious that you are not from this part of the world.
Yeah, I'm from London originally, but I've lived up here since 1966. I went to university here and studied marine biology.
But why get into this whole apple scheme?
I fell into it, really. Bought a house down the road that had some old trees in it and started from there.
Boys, do you want to kind of lead the way around the nursery and show us a few bits and pieces here? Yeah, where should we go next, having left this polytunnel? They're quite interesting constructions, aren't they? They're quite, I don't mean to be rude to your dad, but they're quite higgledy-piggledy.
Yeah.
And they're set in the midst of overgrown hedges and overgrown trees.
Well, Dad keeps them in the valley just to give them a harsh time, really, so... Because the harsher they are here, then when they move to other places, then they're going to be able to grow well because they're used to harder times.
Yes, we know if they're going to survive or not.
Yeah.
So you sound as though you're following on from your dad a little bit then. That's quite knowledgeable for a 14-year-old, Sean.
Yeah.
You just pick it up.
Yeah, pick it up as I go along.
Well, does he get you to do things when you come here?
Yeah, help out with the grafting, pruning and stuff like that, yeah.
Do you? Both of you?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. So, Jojo, do you help too?
Yeah.
It's got very muddy here, you see.
Yeah.
Just pick our way over this. And up to these few trees here. Can you tell me about these that are just at the side of your dad's office and home?
They're like about about 10 different species on one tree. There, I think, is another tree attached to the rootstock. Which is
using grafting further up the tree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you see the little like bandages around the branches. That's because another branch has been attached on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. They're really picking up your apple skills, Ian. Yeah?
Well, that's right. I'm getting a bit too old to work. It's good exercise for children, I think.
Yeah.
To get out in the morning and do a bit of work.
And these trial trees, these experimental trees that you really are putting through their paces, are next to your house, office, shed. It's hard to describe, Sean, isn't it? Because
eco cabin, we'll call it, I think.
Okay, and you call it that because it's made up of all sorts of bits and pieces of
plywood,
old doors, old windows that you have
recycled.
Gathered from where?
Skips.
Anywhere, really. Yeah, skips. All those double glazed units over there, which I'm making this conservatory out of. I got for £10. They're all brand new. All these double glazed units, they were mismeasures.
Should we go into the house then?
Sure, let's go. Come on, follow me.
Do you know what we haven't done yet, Ian? I haven't managed to actually get my teeth into a Bardsey.
I've got some over here if you'd like to try. Do See, this is a nice coloured one, isn't it?
No.
It won't be as crisp as it should be because it's now the end of its season. These are basically ready for juicing.
Good strong scent though.
Good strong scent.
One side of the apple, what would you say that was, boys? That colour?
Yellowy greeny colour.
Yellowy green, and then on the other side, a lovely blush.
Freckled red, yeah.
Yes, so it looks well. So if your dad can use his penknife to split it open, because that's the next test. So this is the Bardsey Island apple. So we've
just
all
cut this piece off here. There you go.
So we've all got a piece. Ready for the grand Bardsey Island apple tasting?
Uh-huh. It's gone soft, it's not too bad, is it?
Mm.
Softened up now.
Mm.
Yeah.
How would you describe the flavour?
I'd say quite sweet and juicy with a bit, bit of a tangy edge to it.
Mm. Mm.
These ones, they're ready to go in the juicer. They're over. They should be really hard and crisp and crunchy, eaten straight off the tree. These have been in storage now for about 2 months.
Should we taste the juice then?
Mm. Yeah, come in. We've got some in the fridge.
So this will be the juice from the apple, the Bardsey apple, that you rescued from the brink of extinction. That's the black and white of it, really, Ian.
Exactly, yeah.
So, boys, there you are, back with the glasses. That's great. You can do the pouring, Sean, off this quite brown liquid. The brown that apples go, you know, when they're
exactly,
oxidized.
Yeah. If you make apple juice after half an hour, it will start to turn brown.
Is that a bad thing?
No, it's a natural thing. You have to put in lots of ascorbic acid to stop it doing that, to stop it oxidising. I mean, I made this for us to drink, not to sell or anything.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers. Yucky
up. Uh-huh. Sharp.
Mm.
But very refreshing, even though that is quite old now. But imagine that, freshly pressed, how lovely that would be. It's not an easy life, the one that you've chosen, this work with the apple trees. It's not going to make you a fortune.
No, you're absolutely right. It'll never make me a fortune. But there again, it's income versus outcome, isn't it? I don't spend a lot. I eat a lot of apples. I drink a lot of juice. You don't need a lot of money to live in North Wales on a fairly simplistic level.
And the reward of it, this work, is what?
The reward of this work, it's quite pleasing to know that my work here will last for another 150 years. It's in people's gardens now for 150 years. They won't remember me, but they'll remember the trees.